Next time. You'll win next time. Just one more try, and you'll get all the rewards you deserve. You've put so much into this. Time and a lot of money. It's not that hard to do, anyway. Click of a button and you're off. Well, sort of. Thankfully, you don't actually have to go anywhere. Not anymore. It's all just so much easier now. But now you just need a win. That'll make everything worth it. It has to be worth it. This is Cursed Knowledge. Welcome back for another Cursed Knowledge. I'm Harper Hunt.
And I'm Ben Hunt.
And I would like to introduce you, Ben, to a concept I think you're familiar with, the concept of casual gambling.
Yeah, I think I'd be pretty familiar with this one. When Harper was asking me to sit down to record this episode, she really wouldn't say much of what she was going to talk about, except say, well, it's about gambling, and I need somebody to represent the mind of a gambler.
I love you dearly, but I also know that you're on your phone playing online poker almost every night.
This may or may not be true. That's right.
So just for everybody else and for you, Ben, when I talk about casual gambling, to borrow some of your language, I'm talking about lowercase g gambling. Gambling that we think of as less dangerous, less risky, no big deal, casual. And part of the reason we think that is because it doesn't take place in a location of gambling.
Right.
You're not in a casino. You're not in Vegas or Atlantic City.
Or the dog track that I would go to outside of Greene County, Alabama.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're not going to any horse tracks. You are not in a place known for gambling.
By the way, Harper, this is a dog track. I mean, a horse track would have been the height of luxury.
I was trying to give a little bit more class to it.
Nope. No class involved.
But the point is, you are not going somewhere with the intent of gambling. This is almost when gambling has come to you.
Yep.
So the biggest place that I'm sure everybody knows that you can see this in is in sports. You have had a huge increase in just the prevalence and opportunities for betting on sports, particularly in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interestingly enough, Rusty Gwynn actually wrote an article about this in 2021 called "The NFL Has a Gambling Problem," which was a great breakdown about why the NFL in particular tends to attract so many sports bets. And it also really went into the increase of gambling language in the media coverage. Interestingly enough, there was a huge jump in gambling language in 2018. You know something that happened in 2018, Ben?
Try me.
There was a Supreme Court case, Murphy v. NCAA, where the Supreme Court overturned a federal law that had banned commercial sports betting. They said it was unconstitutional, and this just opened the floodgates for states to make their own laws about sports betting.
Got it. I remember there was some legal decision, but I didn't know exactly what had happened there.
Basically, after 2018, everybody went wild.
And so that's when DraftKings then comes up and all these guys.
DraftKings, FanDuel, yes. If they didn't exist before, this is when they started making money. It's also talked about a little bit in the note that's much more recent about financial nihilism. There are some great charts there, one of which is from the American Gambling Association that talks about U.S. sports gambling revenue throughout the years. By the way, this is measured in billions.
Okay.
And so in 2019, the revenue was about $0.9
billion.
$0.9 billion, so just under one. 2023, $10.9.
That's pretty amazing. And this is the above-board, legalized sports gambling.
This is the official sports gambling revenue of the U.S.
Got it.
And there's also been a rise in what are called parlay bets.
Mm-hmm.
And these are bets where, I'm sure you know, it's a multi-bet series.
Right.
You place a series of bets, and if you win all of them, you get a multiplier added to your original bet.
With the trick being, you have to win all of them.
Yes.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Trick being, if you miss one of them, it's a bust, you get nothing.
The point being is that people are increasingly betting for the bigger payoffs to make, if not life-changing money, right, to make a lot of money on a small bet. It's people aren't doing this just as a grinding out a little extra cash.
Absolutely. And people are also starting to bet on every part of the game. I know some of the bets that were made on the most recent Super Bowl match. It was no longer, all right, Chiefs or 49ers. It's who's going to win the coin toss.
Yeah. So these are called prop bets, a proposition bet. And they've just exploded now on these online gambling sites. And you can typically make those as part of your parlay bet, where, you know, who's going to win the coin toss will essentially double the payout if you get it right of any other bet you want to make. Less, of course, the edge that the bookie keeps on this.
But of course, as we know, with any form of gambling, the house always wins. So the people who are making the most money off of this are those gambling services like DraftKings and FanDuel, whose ads I cannot get away from. Anytime I see anything sports related, there is a DraftKings ad in the corner constantly.
Well, you know it's going to get worse too, Harper, because now that ESPN actually has a business, you know, their corporation, that Disney now has a business relationship with sports gambling. It's crazy now how this has exploded, Harper, just crazy.
Well, so just so you know how much they've exploded in numbers, so the revenue for DraftKings, 2021, $1.2 billion. Pocket money compared to what they made in 2023, $3.6
billion. Wow, so it's tripled in
They tripled it in 2 years.
Yep.
It has absolutely exploded.
And I think FanDuel is even bigger, right?
FanDuel is still the largest. So I believe 2021, they made $1.9 billion.
Revenues.
In revenue, yes. They had a revenue of $1.9 billion in 2021. 2022, they had a revenue of $3.2 billion. These are billion-dollar companies.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what's fascinating about these bets is that we say that the house always wins. That is by design, right? So whether you're talking about odds being set in a certain way, or you're just talking about what's called parimutuel betting, where the amount of money bet on the different outcomes actually sets the odds without having some odds maker involved in it, except at the very beginning. Either way, it's set up so that invisible to you, the participant, or you can kind of see it when you look at the difference in odds from playing both sides of the same bet. But there's a built-in, call it, you know, used to be 5%. Maybe now it's a little less. I think on some of these more exotic and prop bets, it's actually much higher. A built-in 5% VIG, vigorish. These are kind of the old school words, but the 5% guaranteed profit margin on each bet, gross margin on each bet for the bookie.
See, this is why I wanted to have a gambling conversation with you. I know you were the one to have it with.
Well, it's just been part of my life for so long, and now I find that it is increasingly part of my life, that it's not, I'm not, you know, you mentioned talking about playing online poker at home on my phone. It's available to me all the time now. It's not a special occasion. It's not, you know, going to a special place like you were describing. It's not an event. It's just whenever I turn on the TV or whenever I turn on my smartphone, it's there. Increasingly, I think it's there in my work life as well around markets, which, you know, I got to tell you, and I think this is where you're going when you're talking about gambling with a small g, so much of what happens in markets today is gambling, meaning it's not investing. There's not a positive expected return over some long time horizon. It is a derivative. There is a winner and a loser, and we place our bets on increasingly short time horizons. The most popular instrument in trading today, one that's grown just enormously, is called a zero day to expiration option, meaning It's a bet on whether the market goes up or down today. That's it.
So it's literally a one-day bet.
It's literally a one-day bet on market where the odds are set by how many people you've got on one side of the option versus the other side of the option, with the market maker, the bookie in this case, taking a little cut right down the middle. All of Robinhood, I mean, if you look at these online trading sites, they're dominated not by, oh, I'm going to invest in Microsoft, I'm going to buy this stock. It's all, not all, but increasingly based on derivatives. These shorter term option bets that have a winner and a loser. Most people don't really understand all that goes into the pricing of the option bet, just like people don't really understand what goes into the pricing of the parlay or the prop bets that are they're taking on. It's not, are you betting on the 49ers or, you know, the Cowboys to win the game? It's a bet on, are you betting on a combination of events to happen in a particular order over the course of the game? It's exactly the same way with markets. Yeah.
You're betting on, how is this Rube Goldberg machine going to fall?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. But because we think we understand the machine, or we understand what's being displayed to us, we understand, oh, the price of XYZ is going up or down. This team just scored. This running back just made a play. We think we understand the bet. And the bet and the thing we are watching is becoming increasingly and intentionally separated for us.
Well, another area that casual gaming has really infiltrated is one that you may not be as familiar with as I am, and that is video games.
Okay, you told me this was going to be the subject, and it's this is fascinating to me. So yes. I can't wait to hear this.
Yes. So in particular, there's a lot going on with the state of modern video games and how companies are creating them. There's a lot I could say, not most of it pleasant. But one of the things I want to focus on right now is the idea of loot boxes. That's L-O-O-T, boxes.
A box of loot.
A box of treasure. For those who don't know, a loot box is a feature in a video game which can be accessed through gameplay or purchased with either in-game items, virtual currency, or directly with real-world money. They often appear as chests, crates, card packs, and the idea is that there is an unknown item in there, or items, that if you purchase in some way, you will get that will enhance your gameplay.
It's like a pack of baseball cards where you don't know what you're going to get when you open up the pack.
Yes.
Except it's done virtually. And
you never actually get the cards.
Right. Your money's real.
Your money is very real. So generally, you can always access a loot box by completing in-game events. However, that always takes much longer and is much more difficult. The other guaranteed way to get a loot box...
Pay for it.
Spend real world money.
Yeah, I mean, I was involved with video games way back in the day. It's the eternal trade-off, right? You've either got money or you've got time. You want to appeal to players who have a lot of time, right? You don't just want to appeal to the rich guys, and they're mostly guys, but you also want to appeal to them. You want the money. So you make things available either through spending a lot of time or spending money.
Absolutely. But the loot box at its core is also, it's a game of chance, often use money with real world money at stake. So sometimes these loot boxes will just be what are called cosmetic items. It's a new outfit for your character to wear, a new style of weapon to use, maybe some collectible, but nothing that will affect the performance in game. Sometimes they are items that can affect the performance in game. And that's where you get almost a pay-to-win mentality.
Yeah.
Where the people who spend more money are going to get better equipment much faster.
But, you know, Harper, and again, just knowing something about how this works and the structuring of it, including that element of chance is the crucial thing.
Yes.
You get much more participation, and this is true for baseball cards, this is true for loot boxes, this is true for sports wagering, whatever, this is true for poker. You get much more spent on the game if there's an element of chance to it rather than you say, oh, pay $10 and you get the sword of XYZ.
Yes, that's exactly it. There's also often a lot of these loot boxes have pity timers.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you don't get something good in X number of boxes, it will give you something
good.
You're
guaranteed to get something good. Yep.
Yes. The problem, though, is that creates that gambler's mentality of, if I get enough of them, I'm going to get something good.
I'm guaranteed to get something good,
this,
and maybe
this
I'll
next
hit it big.
One. This next one's going to be it. I'm going to hit it big.
That's always it. That's always it.
And so part of the issue with loot boxes are that they're very, very unregulated. Because traditional gambling and even sports gambling is regulated.
Mm-hmm.
There are different laws based on the country. There are different laws based on the state that you're in. But loot boxes don't have that. They're available within the game all over the world. And the companies have no reason to try to adhere to any gambling restrictions. Why would they? This is how they make money. Again,
how much money? This can't be a really big, and now you're going to tell me what a huge thing this is, aren't you?
Oh, you sweet summer child. So it's estimated that, again, this is between, let's say, all video games with loot boxes.
Mm-hmm.
In 2018, they made about $30 billion from loot boxes.
Oh, come on.
Loot boxes and these microtransactions are genius for video game companies. There's a reason why companies are pivoting to this idea of a live service game with microtransactions. That's a lot of words I just threw out. The idea is a living game that is constantly updating, that you constantly have to pay a little bit more for each time.
Okay, so this is, I'm pulling up my dopamine machine here, my smartphone, because the crazy thing is, Harper, and I had no idea we were going this mm-hmm. way in this, I actually downloaded one of these games about a week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Last Way. You know, it's like, I think, isn't there Farmville? What, you're
Farmville.
You're not building a farm here. You're building your military base of little guys.
Oh, right. Big tough man needs military, not farm.
Yeah, well, yes, exactly. It's much more fun. And you fight the monsters and you build up and you have iron and wheat and all this kind of stuff. I've actually been really good for me of not spending money on this, but spending time. Both of which are problematic for me. It is, and I don't use this word lightly, and I understand what it means because I recognize myself when I use this word. It's addictive.
Absolutely.
It's crazy.
But, and you've also hit on something really important here, which is that when we talk about video games, we are no longer talking about just PC or console games.
Right.
It's not just the Xbox or what you're playing on your computer. It's the apps you have on your phone. That's where you see the most of these microtransactions. The app is free to download.
And the truth is, when I say I've been good at this, I mean good about spending time rather than money. The truth is, I've spent $50 on this game, which is as much as I would spend on, you know, back in the day at least, a top tier PC. I know those games are now more expensive, and I'm dating myself by saying that, but for me, $50 is like, wow, you're buying a really good game.
You're not far off. So right now, AAA games mm-hmm. usually will run about $60 to $80. And those are completed, fully crafted games.
Right.
The idea is, though, that companies have realized once you make that purchase, that's all the money they're going to get out of you. But if they include these little microtransactions, they can keep getting another $5 and then another $5.
Because honestly, it's fascinating to look at this game mm-hmm. as a sociological experiment, because they're always launching new contests and games where you can just slog it out, or you can pay $4.99. You're not guaranteed to get the rewards, right? But here's what the type of rewards you're going to get.
But you're saying there's a chance.
You're saying there's a chance.
Absolutely. Well, here's the other big problem with loot boxes.
Mm-hmm.
They're not regulated by location. They're also not regulated by age.
Right.
Every other type of gambling, and I do consider loot boxes to be gambling.
Clearly.
Every other type of gambling has an age restriction. Now, in the U.S., whether that's 18 or 21 or somewhere in between, that depends on the state.
But I guess you got to have a credit card, though, don't you, or some means of payment.
Got to have access to a credit card.
Yeah, fair point.
What this means is that children are playing games with loot boxes.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm going to take back my statement before as well, because the reason we have limitations on gambling with a capital G
mm-hmm.
on kids isn't because, well, it depends on whether you have access to a credit card, right? It's are you old enough that we as a society say no? You know, frankly, in Alabama, the age limits were pretty low. Unless you were 16, you don't get to go to the dog track.
Right. It assumes that you don't actually understand what's going on here enough to either place an intelligent bet or understand what that bet actually is, what it is that you are risking. But the thing is, almost every kid plays a video game.
Yeah.
90% of children over 2 have played or currently play some kind of video game. About 3/4 of American households have video game consoles. On average, children between the ages of 8 and 17 will spend between 1.5 to 2 hours playing video games daily.
Per day.
Per day.
Yeah. I kind of believe that. I've told you this before, that I'm really so grateful for two things. Mm-hmm. One, that, you know, there were no video game consoles when I was a kid. And two, that online gambling didn't exist when I was in college, because I know myself well enough to know that my life would have gone down a very different path, not necessarily a bad path, but a different path.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the most dangerous things is that a lot of these games that contain loot boxes or other forms of gambling, gambling-inspired mini games, they are often targeted directly towards children.
Yeah.
In particular, so there's a website called Children and Media Australia. It's Australian-based, and it's a place for parents to go and kind of check out the content of an app before their kids download it. And they have an entire tab dedicated for apps that contain loot boxes.
Hmm.
They also have an entire tab for Children and Gambling Watch List. Some of the games that are on that watch list include Barbie Dreamhouse Adventures, Fashion Designer, Super Mario Brothers Run, and Clash of Clans, Clash of Kings.
So all of these are basically have gambling embedded in them.
They have gambling elements embedded in them, exactly. And oftentimes parents, you don't know that. You buy your kid Barbie Dreamhouse Adventures, you don't think there's a gambling element to it.
Right.
Your kid comes up and says, Mom, I need $5. Or if they're on your phone and you have Apple Pay, they just click the button and it goes through. Suddenly, your kid's paying a few $100 every year for these games. And because it's all virtual, we start to lose the concept of how much money we're actually spending.
Yep. It's so right.
It's all downhill. And for me, the scariest part of all of this is how easily it has creeped into all these different facets of our life. Gambling is no longer restrained to a physical location. It now is almost permeating every element of what we do.
Not almost. And I've tried to be writing some about this, and we're going to talk about some of this at our Connect conference, but it's about what we've talked about is the speculation layer, like an operating system layer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a layer like in a computer science sense, like at the layer of our programming. It's now at this basic layer of society programming where it's in everything. Certainly it's in sports, like you've been saying. Certainly it's in investing, like I'm saying. I really didn't know how much it had permeated, let's call it entertainment, like video games. You see it more and more in politics when they talk about the odds and the betting odds on different candidates. I'm hard-pressed to think of any place where it hasn't spread and oozed into the what we consider to be normal.
And I think one of the best things that we can do is also just kind of point it out when we see it.
Yep.
Recognize it for what it is, because it has been as much as we want to talk about how it's been this great boom, this billions of dollars are being made through these gambling sites, it's also important to notice that it's been innocuous enough that we don't recognize it as gambling.
Mm-hmm.
We think since we're not sitting down at the slot machine that when we buy a loot box, it's not the same thing.
And it is. We have to call things by their proper names. Harper, thank you for this particular episode of Cursed Knowledge, which is actually truly cursed, but I hope it makes a difference in the way that we see the world.
Thank you, Ben. And thank you for bringing your unique perspective to the conversation.
Sadly, not unique, but thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you learned something new. And remember, the real curse is sharing this information with your friends, family, and unsuspecting coworkers. If you enjoyed this production, like, share, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And please, tell us your most cursed knowledge by joining us on the forums at epsilontheory.com.